Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together toward best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, a two-legged, cisgender, old white man of privilege, living in a food oasis who can afford many hats and knows a little bit about a lot of healthcare and a lot about very little. Most people wear hats one at a time, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. Matt Neal and I collaborate as students of podcasting. In our day job, he learns about teaching. I learn about health. We both use the medium of audio to learn and advocate. We're podcasters. We talk once a week on Zoom video and almost daily on our Slack podcasting community. We've never met in person. When I began producing episodes about becoming CEO of your health, I knew I needed to chat with Matt. Healthcare and secondary education feel similar to me. Are they? What can we learn from a professional educator about becoming a leader? Can I learn about learning to become a better CEO of my health from a high school teacher? Matt,
Danny,
thanks for joining me. I'm very excited.
I'm happy to be here. I'm excited too.
Good. Matt, how do you introduce yourself to people in a social situation?
My name is Matt Neal. I'm a teacher. I teach young people, primarily high school age students, but I consider myself a teacher, coach, and mentor. And those are skills that I have cultivated, but also part of a calling. This is going into my 13th or 14th year teaching. That doesn't seem real.
Where were you when you first realized that health was fragile?
My mother-in-law battled and died of cancer. Mm-hmm. And that happened when my wife was in her 20s when we were living Eastern Pennsylvania, and her mother got really sick, and she had cancer and had treatments and different things and recovered, and then she came to visit us and stayed with us for a while. And when she was staying with us, she was pretty healthy still. Mm-hmm. And then I just remember there's a point, because my wife worked for the American Cancer Society, where she realized that her mom was really not doing well. Mm-hmm. Her mom was dying. And she took a leave of absence and went and stayed with her, and I had to keep working. Mm-hmm. So we were apart for several months, and it was just horrible. The only bright spot out of that was that my wife was able to be there with her. Mm-hmm. and was able to, because she knew it was coming, it was hard and brutal, but also a process that she went through with her mom. Comparing that to my father-in-law died, it would be two Novembers ago. And that was extremely sudden. Mm. He was in his mid-70s, but he was doing up-downs, burpees, in my living room, showing me how he could do these. Mm-hmm. And then we get this horrible call that something happened, and it was just immediate. Mm. Her dad was one of my best friends. Really tough.
So you're a secondary school teacher, right? You write and talk a little bit about the setting, the circumstances, and methods of learning. And recently you wrote something about student enrollment. Mm-hmm. And I know that Seth Godin wrote in Medium in April, he wrote this statement. Because when you said it, I looked it up, because enrollment is not a word that I would usually use. Mm-hmm. And so he said, enrollment is what happens when you're already engaged in the journey, when it's something you seek out, something you're eager for. Is that the definition that you're using when you talk about enrollment?
Well, Seth's podcast that he did. It was an episode of Akimbo. What's the thing that kids always say about school that they hate? It's because they have to do it.
Right.
They're forced to do it. I think enrollment is getting them to become a part of their educational experience and be an active member in that so that they are joyfully or excitedly participating in their educational experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a challenge. It's doable.
Right. You think part of it is that they're a captive audience and it's mandatory and it's part of being a young person.
What's a subject or a class that you loved in school?
History.
Me too. Why was that?
An amalgamation of these stories in a different time, experiencing the same thing I'm experiencing, in the sense of family, food, community, stress, tragedy, inspiration. But in like a completely different setting. Mm-hmm. I really like that. Like that was exciting.
Me too. I'm willing to bet, and I might be wrong, but almost always I'm willing to bet you had at least one great history teacher.
I did. It was a Jerry Keeney.
Jerry Keeney.
What was really cool about what he did was he taught American history in high school. And he took, I can't remember whether it was four or six events in American history. And the one I remember the most is the Constitutional Convention. Mm-hmm. And he assigned everybody in the class a person that was there. And we had to study who that person was and where they lived and what their family, you know, where they grew up and, you know, just get to know them. And then he would stage these scenes where we would be that character. And then he would change something and say, what if this happened instead? Oh my goodness. It was so creative.
A quick break to plug myself. See the show notes or my website, www.health-hats.com, and click on Blog Podcast for more information, to subscribe, or contribute. If you like it, share it. Thanks.
In your role as this leader with a captive audience, mm-hmm. there are so many nuances, like whether the kid is hungry, whether there's a bunch of stress at home, whether it's early in the day or late in the day, that there's these factors that don't have to do with school mm-hmm. that impact their enrollment. Like, how does that present itself to you?
Every day. Every class period of every day, there are outside factors influencing the kids that can be much stronger or more powerful than anything we can do. Mm-hmm. But we can't control those things. We can only try to help those kids as much as possible with the things that we can help and in the classroom. So you're right. If a child comes in and is hungry, mm-hmm. one, we need to feed them. Mm-hmm. And two, if you're hungry, you're not learning. It's very hard. It's possible, but it's extremely hard. Child comes in and they haven't slept, or they slept 2 hours last night for whatever reason. There's many different reasons.
Right.
That kid is going to have a really hard time learning. Kids come in who come from different types of situations where they don't have food at home. They don't have stability in the home. There could be a serious illness mm-hmm. in the family. That impacts their learning. The first step is you have to be aware of that.
Okay. I think
the old school way of saying, my job is to teach history. Mm-hmm. And that's it. And it's not to get involved at all in anything. But that does not work, mm-hmm. in my opinion, anymore. Yeah. There might have been a time when that worked. I don't know if it ever did or not, but it doesn't work for me. It's never worked to me. Being aware that Susie is really hungry and being aware that Johnny is struggling, his parents are maybe getting a divorce.
How is health taught in school? I don't remember actually learning anything in school about it. But how does that happen where you are? Do schools introduce people to health and wellness?
I think that the answer to that question is it varies tremendously depending on where you are and where we are. I think we should be doing much more on health. I think personally, but unfortunately, that's the answer for everything, right?
Yeah.
So I think that education, right or wrong, for the past in the US, the past 10, 15, 20 years has been maybe standardized testing, maybe English and math, mm-hmm. primarily. Now there's a huge push for STEM, which is great. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of
STEM is science, technology, science,
engineering, and math.
Okay. Yeah.
Which are all very good things. Mm-hmm. But whenever you focus on one thing, you don't focus on another, and there's limited time. So I'd love to do more with health. Well, what do you cut? You really can't cut anything because everything's stretched so much. But in our district, kids have health class. I do think that they have it with physical education. Mm-hmm. So it would be a quarter of health and a quarter of phys ed. And that is taught by a physical education and health teacher. And I think our teachers do a great job with that, with the limited time they have. I mean, think about that, 9 weeks for health, for something that is such a huge subject. So I would say that it varies quite a bit. And then I think we should be doing a lot more on mental health and social emotional health. And social. Okay. I think we should be more aware, as I said, as teachers about mental health and physical health and how there's an interplay there. And we should be trying to arrange a school around healthy things, healthy environments for those kids, which I think we do. But one thing we do that is for a lot of good logical reasons, but is crazy, is we wake the kids up at a time that is, it's just unhealthy. It's terrible for them. So we start school at 7:20. A lot of schools start at 7, 7:30, 7:40, and they are not ready. Mm-hmm. They're exhausted. So my first period, I'm a pretty engaging guy. I'm pretty loud, candidly. And they are still exhausted. They're looking at you like, how can I think when I should still be in bed?
Right. You must have regularly people in your class that have had an acute or a chronic illness, mm-hmm. whether it's physical health or mental health. But how then do you engage in that or take that into consideration for the day and for the plan for that person? And how does that happen as a teacher?
That's a great question. Someone who has an ongoing health issue, but they'll have a specific medical plan in place.
Okay.
And those accommodations will be, we know those at the beginning of the year. Let's say I had a student who was hard of hearing, but they read lips very well. Mm-hmm. Well, in that situation, I'm always very cognizant of where I am in the room.
Okay.
And they might not want me to wear a microphone because that then calls attention to what's happening with them. But I can make sure my face is facing them.
Yeah.
I can give them a better seat. I can be very aware of that. That as teachers, there's a lot we can do to make that class better for them.
Mm-hmm.
Put students who around them who don't mumble.
Mm-hmm.
Or who speak very clearly and look at that person who are very personal, that can help.
Mm-hmm.
Just as little things here and there. Yeah.
I'm going to shift a little bit now. So now I want to think about the healthcare world. And I'm really interested in how people enroll in their health. And in my language, it's I'm in charge of my health. I'm the CEO of my health. There's people like me. I'm the CEO of my health, and I can't help it. It's just the way I am. I need a certain set of things to be successful at being the CEO of my health. But I'm not typical. Most people either don't have some skills that they need, some confidence, or even know that it's an option.
What do you mean by that? Can you say more about that?
You go to the doctor tells you what to do. You take a pill, you take a pill. And then they got to deal with, well, can I afford it? How am I going to get it? Whatever. But
they're passive, not active. That's part of it.
Yeah. It's really not part of our culture. It's awful dangerous to make too many generalizations about culture because there's so many different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
I think I know that people who take control of their health manage better. Their symptoms are often more manageable. I deal a lot with pain management. Mm-hmm. And a common thing that people say is that it's important to have control, to feel control over your pain. I don't like saying feel control. I mean have control. That there are options, that I have options. I can choose things. I'm not dependent on somebody else all the time. I know what works and what doesn't. That those are things that really help people. Mm-hmm. I listen to you and I listen to Maria, who's somebody else in our fellowship who thinks a lot about learning. She has a podcast, Impact Learning. And I keep thinking about that for healthcare, mm-hmm. that how we learn about our bodies, about ourselves, how we learn to learn about it. There's so many similarities to education, that mm-hmm. there's an educational industrial complex. There's a healthcare industrial complex. They're systems because it's something big. It's like mandatory education. It's like, you know, everybody goes to the doctor, almost everybody. Almost everybody goes to school. Mm-hmm. So there's a similarity in that it's affects everybody. But we're also different. I just wonder what you think about how people learn and taking the scenario of learning to be in charge of their health, just like be in charge of their learning.
I think you said something at the beginning of this conversation that applies here. That's just the way I am. Mm-hmm. And the way you are is shaped how you were raised and your parents talked to you about health.
Right.
At a very young age.
Yes.
Yeah. You had a very matter-of-fact, detailed knowledge
yeah.
of your body and of health, whereas many people do not. And I do believe that, and again, I'm biased because mm-hmm. I'm a teacher, but education is the key here. And by education, I don't just mean knowledge, although knowledge is a part of it. You were said something too about it being not knowing that it's an option. And that's how I think a lot of kids and parents approach school, is they think, well, I just kind of show up and exist there, as opposed to being, like you said, being in control. We all know that one of the differences between a good and a great student is a great student's, what are they doing? They're asking questions. Mm-hmm. They're taking great, great notes. They're helping other members in the classroom, right? That with their learning as well. They're doing the reading, they're doing the work. And to me, that can apply to healthcare, right? Anytime I've had any health issue mm-hmm. that are minor, I'm always amazed by the amount of knowledge I need to know just to, well, how do I manage this? How can I get better? How can I improve? How can I deal with it? And it can be very overwhelming. And I think that's how a lot of kids feel in school, because the kids are overwhelmed. Some of them throw up their hands and they say, well, why bother? Or they just get by. Does that happen in healthcare too? It seems like it would.
Oh, totally. I interviewed Melissa Reynolds, and she has a fibromyalgia, and she writes and advocates and coaches people with the pain and symptoms of fibromyalgia, especially in pregnancy. What Melissa says is that people need to do the work of their health. Mm-hmm. You can have a team, a really good team, but you still got to do it. You have to do it and then see, did it work or not? Mm-hmm. That it's not a passive process. And I thought you just said something similar. Education is a process of being engaged and doing the work.
Yes. Global feedback to every student teacher I've ever had has always been, who's doing the heavy lifting in this lesson plan? Almost always the teacher is doing the heavy lifting. It's primary lecture based. It's transmitting information. And by the way, lectures can be great and important and helpful. But the idea is, if you have five lesson plans, and if you're doing 100% of the heavy lifting, you're not giving them a challenge to overcome. Right. There is very little learning going on.
Yeah.
There's a famous John Adams quote I always think about, where he says, a scholar is made alone. And what he's trying to tell his son is that you have to be willing to go and sit down and put your head down and do whatever work that is on your own. But I would add to that, then you have to share that work and have a community. Otherwise, who are you doing the work for? Mm-hmm. You're doing it for yourself. I might do something and think it's terrible or think it's not that good and share it. And you say, well, actually, this part right here, I really like this. And then I have something to work from.
Mm-hmm. Let's think about that in terms of healthcare. This is the challenge I'm dealing with. I've got to do the work myself. But if I have a team or a support system, then I can say, well, this worked, this didn't. Somebody can say, oh, but you know, that worked. You don't see it, but it worked. Okay, so there's that community. And for me in healthcare, I've really advocated for years peer communities in health. But I imagine that students that are engaged together,
yes,
learn a ton. Mm-hmm.
If you look back at the classes that you really enjoyed, you probably had a great relationship with your teacher.
Yeah.
And you had classmates, and you had peers that really made it real for you and was fun. And I've had classes with teachers that were only okay, but I love the people in the class. Mm-hmm. And that class ended up being a really good class. I have kids sit in groups of four. Mm-hmm. Because a group of four isn't a group of four. It's three groups of two. Mm. And they can have different conversations, and they can share their work quickly. So we do a lot of quick read alouds for 90 seconds about this topic, and we're going to read aloud. You're not going to read in front of the class. We're going to read to a partner. And I say, hey, turn to your diagonal partner, read that aloud to them, and have a one-minute conversation. And then I might say, who wants to volunteer? And a couple kids get some extroverts to get to share out their responses. Mm-hmm. And then they've all connected with the learning. So they've used their writing. Mm-hmm. They're able to speak, listen, and write in those scenarios. And those little things tie them to the what we're doing much more. Mm-hmm. And if they have someone who they're interacting with frequently, like we do, they are more tied to the class. And any class that I've ever had where the kids are sad that it's the last day are classes where they have formed deep bonds with their fellow students, as well as a deep bond with me. And if there are tears on the last day, you did something right. Now, that doesn't happen too often. Right. But when it does, you're like, oh. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we take that and apply it to healthcare.
That's not going to happen with your doctor or your nurse. That's going to happen with peers. It's one of the beauties to me of the internet world.
Yes.
Being ill is an incredibly lonely process, no matter how extrovert and gregarious you are. It's you. Your spouse, your partner doesn't experience what you experience. But other people who are experiencing something similar to what you're experiencing is very powerful. Yeah.
Maybe you have your answer right there. I feel like you know this.
Yeah. What I've been thinking about is this idea of planting a seed and being satisfied with that. Hmm. Now I'm old, I'm seasoned, whatever you want to call it. My enthusiasm for changing those days are over. My sights are more set on small gains with individuals and small communities of people. I really want to try to refine this business of planting a seed so that when a person is ready, it can sprout. Their journey changes a little bit because there was a moment of recognition. And I think that's beautiful if that can happen. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of patience. I don't mean patience meaning sitting and waiting for the thing to sprout. I mean patience to say, okay, I planted a seed. That's a good thing. That's enough for right now. And, you know, move on. So do like you need like to, think about to that like as a teacher?
From my own perspective, I am never okay when a student isn't doing well or isn't learning. I'm always thinking, how can I reach the student, right? Mm-hmm. But you can take that too far.
Yeah.
And you can beat yourself up. And I have definitely been there in my career. I think any teacher who tries to be good has experienced that frustration of, I know he or she can do this. I know that this student can do this, but they're not. How can I help them? And you want to be a problem solver and do that. However, I think there are times when you have to take the small wins mm-hmm. and say, maybe I've influenced this kid and maybe they'll realize it in the future. Maybe they don't realize it now. And I think planting the seed is a very good way of saying that. And it is, it has to be a partnership. I cannot drag kids over the finish line for their education. They have to run. Mm-hmm. I can reach out in many, many different ways. And I think we should as teachers, but yeah, I feel like planting the seed is sometimes, you know, that's at least the start. And sometimes a child will come back to you months or even years later and say, hey, I remember when you said this.
Yeah.
And it did. And it spoke to me and I wasn't in a place to receive that at the time, mm-hmm. but now I am.
Yeah. That's great. I think about my son, who's a first grade teacher. My wife and I have gone to his class and done a unit on the heart or something. And one of the things that I see that he does that I just think is amazing is he stands at the door in the morning mm-hmm. and he shakes the kid's hand as they walk in the room and says, good morning. I'm so glad you're here. We're going to have a good day. And then at the end of the day, he does the same thing. He stands at the door and he shakes their hand and he said, I'm really delighted that we could spend this day together and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. And I think for some of these kids, it may be the only respect that they experience.
Yes.
And it's like every day.
I love that.
And I think like, so that's not like necessarily planting a seed. But it's like making the ground a little more fertile.
Love is a very powerful thing. And showing respect and love, and it's the I see you thing as well. People act like kids are in the way. They're not in the way. Right. We want them here. There have been young people I have said that to as they're going out the door to college. Hey, we're counting on you. And sometimes they're like, yeah, okay. But then other times they go, you're counting on me?
Mm-hmm.
Say, yes, your family is counting on you. Your community is counting on you. We're counting on you, your teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And the country is counting on you. The world is. We need you. And I think people don't hear that enough. So I love that your son does that. I want to just say first grade teachers, elementary school teachers, are the most underrated teachers. I can't give them enough praise, because great elementary school teachers can impact a kid so deeply, and because they're with them for so long. I might have my students in a day for 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. They're with them the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a great elementary school teacher, I think there are studies that show it's double or triple the growth from a poor teacher to a great elementary school teacher. It's not just academic growth that we need to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
All of their habits for success come from, or many of their habits from success come from those early years.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate you sharing that story. That is a remarkable thing he is doing, as I'm sure among other things, and they will feel that impact.
In healthcare, the thing that I hear most are two things. One is you got to show up, you got to do the work. But the other thing is dignity. The challenges of dignity in the healthcare machine.
And now, a quick break to hear about our sponsor, Abridge. I see many clinicians on a regular basis, way too many. I'm appalled at how little I can remember when I get home. My wife asks me, "What did she say? What about this medication or that test?" I'm happy to remember half of it. To help me remember everything, I downloaded a new smartphone app called Abridge. Now, when I talk to the doctor, I ask if it's okay to record our conversation. Nobody has said no yet. I push a big pink button to record, and after I'm done, the transcript from our audio appears. Not the whole thing, that's too much, but sections around medical keywords like fatigue, pain, tests, exercise, meds. Now, when I'm done, I can share my visit with my wife, and she can listen to exactly what the doctor said. Abridge was created by patients, doctors, and caregivers. Check out the app at abridge.com. ABRIDGE.com. Or download it on the Apple App Store or Google Play Store. Record your health conversations. Let me know how it went.
What should we be talking about that we haven't?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Why did you want to have this conversation? Because you seemed very excited to do it right away.
Yeah.
And that made me excited to do it. Why did you want to have this conversation?
I wanted to have this conversation because I've been chewing on this issue of how people learn to be CEO of their health. And I felt like I needed to talk to some people who I respected who weren't in healthcare and to try to get a different perspective. This week, I talked with Jane Bedell, who does the Conflict podcast, and just talking with her about how people make decisions and how people learn the skills of making decisions and resolving questions with each other and differences with each other. So it was another example of looking at this from a different point of view. Just listening to you and reading your stuff was somebody chewing on this in a different world. And so that's why.
I very much appreciate you saying that. And you've been so kind to me in this conversation and in our work together. And what you were doing, I think, is part of the solution, which is I do think people need to be more involved in what they are, in everything they do. Mm-hmm. And when I'm thinking, when I talk to you or I talk to someone else in our group, and I get their perspective, it makes me look at my own situation totally differently. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I'm not sure if this is how it is for you or not, but for me, I've been teaching for these years. I feel like, again, there's still so much out there that we're not doing.
Right.
Could do that. Some things take more effort, and there is not a lot of time left in a school day mm-hmm. to add, which is, I think, what a lot of people want to do. But for me, I'm looking at where is some hidden thing that we don't know about, or it's right there in front of us, but we can't see it yet. And I think that is part of what you're doing here is like, what is this other person doing mm-hmm. in their field that I could borrow and pull into mine? Right. So that's fascinating to me.
We homeschooled. And
wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Through the seventh grade. That really gave me a different view of education, because my feeling is education is about learning life. Experience to be a good person and contribute to the community and be satisfied and fulfilled with your family and contribute to the next generation. We spent a lot of time together and we learned through doing stuff together. Whatever it is we did, I had to find stuff that we were both interested in, or we were all interested in, because, you know, my feeling, if my kid had an interest and I didn't care, I needed to find somebody else to work with them, somebody who did care about whatever. Clearly, as you've heard from this conversation, I have a lot of interest in history. Well, it turned out so did the kids. And we were living in West Virginia, and the Civil War was a big thing. So we did a lot of reading about the Civil War and traveling and seeing things about the Civil War. You know, we cooked, you know, we kept bees. We had chickens. We had a garden. We were building a house. So, you know, we were lobbying for a law.
That sounds great.
Yeah, so we did stuff together, and I felt like we all learned how to learn together.
Which is one of the most important things you can do.
Maybe the issue for both of us is it's not packing more into the day, but it's facilitating, encouraging a process to take when people are not with the expert, the teacher, the doctor, the nurse.
Yes.
Because they want it.
Yes. I guess the challenge there is what do you do when people don't?
You're not God.
That's true. But I think giving people experiences, getting people experiences to hook them.
Yeah, to have a success.
Have a success. Small wins can be a big deal.
Yeah, big deal. I agree.
Experiences and setting up, giving them a path. To say, here are some things you could try.
Yeah.
Let us know if any of these things work.
Yeah. All right, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Danny. This is great. I had fun.
Yeah, me too.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the time and talk soon.
We will. Okay. Right.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The answer to my question, can I learn about learning to become a better CEO of my health from a high school teacher? Yes, absolutely. Matt confirmed my sense that learning rests best on a foundation of dignity and respect. We agreed that unless a person willingly works to learn about anything, planting a seed may be the most sustainable action we can take. Hopefully, Health Hats, the podcast, plants such a seed. Matt introduced me to who's doing the heavy lifting. If teachers do the heavy lifting in education, do kids learn? Matt says really not too much. If clinicians do the heavy lifting for health, can we become CEOs of our health? I'll have to chew on that one. I invited Matt to the podcast to explore the concept of enrollment, joyful learning. Can we use managing or leading in chronic illness and joyful in the same sentence? I don't know. Maybe passionate learning, energetic learning, eager learning. Regulations, custom, and inertia drive both education and healthcare, and life gets in the way for both. Some education and some healthcare practitioners develop workarounds to accommodate life. Massive frustrations. Arr. Yet in the moments when I appreciate the outcome of best health, living at peak capacity, I confess to a thrill running through me. I try to surround myself with health. I'm a healthier person and a better CEO when I'm part of a supportive, positive, learning community. Unfortunately, neither education nor healthcare are particularly healthy industries. Oh, that's so sad. Perhaps CEOs of their health need small communities of support if their teams don't already provide that. Have you, the CEO of your health, created such a community of support? If yes, where? How? How's it going? If not, can you start now? Follow my blog, podcasts, and resources through my website. See you around the block.